When Ryan's when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind Around with John Pollock and Waiting the 18 that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind Around for Monday night, download a Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind Around for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Wade take the mic.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Rewind to Raw. I am John Pollock, joined by Wei Ting, and dare I say, wait, is this a new t-shirt?
It's not, actually.
It looks had like it a
for,
new one.
Had it for a while.
Oh, okay. Well, there we go. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Yeah, not bad. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing okay.
Okay. How was your weekend?
My weekend was good. It was nice out. Went to a park.
Did you?
Yeah, I went out to the park. That
nice.
Was a lot of fun. Yes.
I took the kid out like on the street. You know.
Really. Oh yeah, he's
That's
out
about
on,
it.
Wandering on the street.
No, just like in a stroller, really. Like you know, small, tiny steps, one at a time.
Okay. Well.
Yeah.
That was fun. Has he?
Yeah. Like, we'll work up to a park at some point eventually. Okay.
Have you like taken him out before? Like, was this like a big?
I mean, it was kind of our first time, like you know, even taking the stroller out of the house and or at least like on the way to the park. So I suppose a bit significant in that way.
How was that?
It was great.
It was nerve wracking.
He's really quiet. No, he's really quiet when he's out. I think it's like the rumble of like the stroller. Like in the car, he's always like super quiet. So, we should take him out more often. I think.
Oh. Well, maybe he could give notes to my daughter at 4 in the morning when she decides, you know what? Everyone's day is about to start right now because I'm going to scream and just not stop.
There's plenty of that going on here too, so yeah.
Well, there you go. How early have you been up since?
How did these three-hour Raws feel
at the end of a day?
I had a really good nap actually before this, so I was okay. Last night I've been sleeping at like 7 a.m., so I try to fit in naps when I can, but I'm doing all right right now.
Well, we're going to be doing all right this week because we've got a great schedule of shows coming up, including Volume 6 of the world-renowned Talk series with myself and Wei Ting. 90 minutes of it.
That is correct, yeah. We'll be back tomorrow. You know, this is an edition of Talk that John and I recorded on our way to Buffalo, so you're going to hear the whole ride. And if you enjoyed the thrilling conversation about strollers and taking kids out, this is one that you won't want to miss because, John, of course, you know, there's a lot to catch up on with you about the whole process of what it's like to become a parent for the first time. And, I really appreciated, you know, now being able to kind of relate to you on a different level. So we spent a good amount of time talking about that.
Selfishly, I really enjoyed this. I don't know if everyone's going to enjoy our parent chat, but I really enjoyed this one quite a lot. So we will see if everyone cares so much about that. There's like no wrestling in this chat, so we will forewarn people ahead of time.
There usually isn't. I mean, that's kind of the point, you know.
Yeah.
So that'll be available, of course, in the Post Wrestling Cafe, also in the YouTube section. For YouTube memberships. Again, we remind people that the Post Wrestling Cafe is now available on YouTube. So if you sign up here, you will get that as well. Also, Apple Podcasts.
In fact, you
can even do a free trial for 1 week on Apple Podcasts to see if you like all this stuff. You know, maybe it's like, maybe you try it a week and you're like, you know what? These guys suck. I'm done.
I do hear that sometimes, so that's okay.
that's perfectly reasonable.
Rolls off my shoulder.
Perfectly reasonable, but then again, there might be at least 1 out of 10 of you who would be like, you know, I kind of like these guys. So you can even do a 1 week free trial if you're an Apple Podcasts preferred, I guess, listener.
There you go. So you can take a bite out of the apple, see if you like how it tastes, and then you can commit to more. There is, of course, postwrestlingcafe.com. That is your go-to place for all of our bonus shows, and we will have multiple bonus shows this week, including Rewind to SmackDown and MCU Later with Rich Fan and WH Park that are just taking the world by storm, dropping exclusives about Echo. Apparently there was some big news that came out Friday that was reported on MCU Later the day before that listeners could have heard about. I don't know.
Was it big news?
I don't know. There was something I saw.
That was broken?
I don't know if it was broken. It was discussed the night before, I guess, and then it became a news item the next day.
Ah, okay. Interesting. I have to pay attention a bit closer to the news cycle, but that's right. Yeah, last week they had the showrunner for Echo on to talk about She-Hulk, and WH returning back to MCU later this week. I'm sure he'll have plenty of takes, maybe even about his stay in Chicago.
Yes, yes. Always takes from WH Park. So you can catch all of that at postwrestlingcafe.com this week, and a special show that's dropping on Wednesday that will be on our main feed, on the Post Wrestling feed. Braden and Davey are doing a special roundtable show in conjunction with the one-year anniversary of NXT flipping formats to the current NXT 2.0 branding, and they are going to be joined by Jason Solomon and Denise Salcedo, and they're going to be chatting all about the last year, the transition from the black and gold era, the good, the bad, and many of the ugly that has come out of NXT 2.0. Some good stuff, though, as well. So I'm looking forward to that discussion with the four of them. That's dropping on Wednesday, so you'll get an Up Next on Tuesday covering the anniversary show, and then Wednesday is the roundtable show.
Yeah, yeah. I'm really excited for that, you know, to be able to hear some of these, like, I think, big names, you know, in the podcasting, wrestling, YouTube space, in Solomon and also Denise. So very excited to hear about those guys. And
can we all give credit that the best audio and video of the famous press conference, courtesy of Denise Salcedo last week?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
As much as people, I'm sure, love watching the CM Punk press conference with the
Darth Vader voice.
I work with children. it was really like jarring to listen to all this, where it's like you can. It sounds like, you know, that you're listening to like your cassette's broken or something.
Yeah, I'm not gonna take this shit any longer.
I'm tired. I'm hurt. I work with children.
How many quotables have, you know,
I can't believe there are, well, press conference. There will be
how many t-shirts can be made, you know?
I think
Target t-shirts are, I guarantee you, like, you know, hot sellers now if Target makes t-shirts.
Oh, there, when the time is right, there should be a Young Bucks shirt coming out with like the Target logo of what they can get away with like the Young Bucks over it or something, or like a fit, like managers.
I mean, I think this needs to culminate at the Target Center.
It could, yeah.
Minneapolis, book it.
All right. Well, that's just some of the shows coming out this week. This past weekend, we had WrestleNomics coming out with Jesse, Chris, and Brandon. UFC 279 post show with myself and Eric Marcotte covering Saturday's card. Did you follow any of the craziness that came out of the card way? Nate Diaz winning in a spectacular fashion with a guillotine. I mean, it was quite the card on Saturday, despite all the chaotic changes in the 24-hour lead-up. I know you love the chaos on Friday.
Oh, who doesn't? You know, I feel like I heard more about this UFC show than many in quite a while. I heard about the results, haven't seen the fights, but, you know, happy for Nate Diaz to be able to go out on a win.
All right. So all of that up at postwrestling.com, and check out Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and postwrestlingcafe.com. Anything else you'd like to get out of the way before we go on to Newsway?
Let's get into the news.
Well, I wanted to start off with the very sad news involving the passing of Elias Theodoro, who was a former UFC fighter, won Tough Nations back in 2014. And this was someone that we got to know very well over the many years. I know myself, I got to meet him several months before he started on The Ultimate Fighter. And this was someone that, you know, when he was 21 years old, that was the first time he walked into a martial arts gym. He did not have a background in any martial arts. At 21, to pretty much start from scratch, and within several years, he's in the UFC. He's winning at the UFC level. I mean, he went 8-3 in the UFC's middleweight division and had some quality wins while he was there, beating the likes of Sam Alvey, Cesar Ferreira, who was the Tough Brazil winner in their first season, Dan Kelly. His only losses were, you know, to Thiago Santos, Brad Tavares and Derek Brunson. Derek Brunson, like, still like a high level quality middleweight in the UFC, and then left the UFC. He fought several more times, winning three fights outside of the UFC, but somebody that just had, I mean, such a personality about him. He had his hand in so many different areas beyond just fighting. Like, this was someone that did modeling. He had these endorsements. He was just involved in just all these different areas. He pushed really hard to get a therapeutic use exemption for medicinal marijuana. He had suffered an injury and he had some like nerve issue, so he was able to get a therapeutic use exemption to use marijuana, first in British Columbia and later in Colorado. He did a stint with Invicta FC, where he was the guy holding the ring cards going around the cage. Just someone with, like, yeah, he was the ring boy. And just such a tremendous personality about him. Like, that was my first impression of him, was, man, if this guy can fight, he's going to be the star of this reality show. And then he goes on Tough and he ends up winning the season. And it was just such a likable individual of the many, many times that I got to speak with him over the years.
Certainly, yeah. I was thinking earlier today, and I feel like he might be, if not the very top, certainly among the top of people that we've shot the most footage of at the Fight Network, you know, at least during the time that I was there. And it was because he was incredibly, you know, talented as a fighter, but
he was also because, very, very media savvy. I mean, he was somebody that, like, would reach out to me to, like, come on and talk, and I'm sure did with many different outlets. Like, he was the one, this was like when he was in the UFC, just wanting to, you know, get his name out there, and just like, you can find like so many pieces on him and different interviews he did. Like, he really understood that aspect of selling himself.
Yeah, I don't exactly know like how big of an extent of a professional wrestling fan he was. I didn't even realize he, like, I saw somebody alerted me to like an old tweet about him asking what happened to our show on the Fight Network. And so I guess he at least like paid attention, you know, to the wrestling content on the Fight Network. And it shows, because I think he very much had that sort of mindset of, you know, knowing that this was not just a sport, but a personality driven industry. And it culminated in him being a part of the Amazing Race Canada too, didn't it?
That's right. Yeah. He was on that a number of years ago. I think it was the third season he was on that. Just seemed to be somebody that just had his eye on marketing himself and going in many different directions. Like, he understood. And he was somebody that in later years, like, he was, you know, he spoke up about, you know, fighters' rights and the pay issues. And he understood, like, this is a platform I have that is not the be-all, end-all when it comes to, you know, making, you know, all these, like, you cannot just make your living in one area. It was, I can use this platform to get myself into all these different directions. And just reading some past interviews with him, I mean, he was just a very intelligent individual, I found. Mm-hmm. And you could hear, like, he was very well versed in the fight game, but also how it applied elsewhere and getting his name across. Like, this was somebody that, yeah, like, he was talking about, you know, potentially one day, like, getting into politics. Like, he seemed to have like a very high ambition for himself beyond fighting. Yeah.
So he last fought in December.
He fought just this past December. So, yeah, this was like, very few people had known that he was sick, and a message has come out on like his family has put out a statement that he died on Sunday. And the statement writes, he passed away peacefully at home with his family and loved ones in his corner after a hard fought fight with colon cancer that metastasized. And he faced his end as he lived his life eternally, irrationally, and infectiously optimistic. And yeah, there's just information as well about just some of the places that you can donate. But it sounds like he kept this very quiet. It was only a select few that he had alerted that he was sick. And then this broke late on Sunday night. And I woke up to this morning and just reading it immediately, and just, you know, and many people just so surprised. He was only 34 years of age. It's a very tragic story.
Yeah, certainly. You know, we, in covering the sport, like, I think we know a lot of people who, you know, were very close to him. So I obviously I want to send all my, you know, thoughts and well wishes to everybody affected by it. He was a big name in our little community here in MMA.
Yeah, absolutely. So rest in peace to Elias Theodoro. And yes, our condolences to all of his friends and family. There's a lot of tributes out there. And, you know, you can go read a lot of, you know, the interviews he did. Like they're really enlightening. And somebody that like it was not I recall like just, you know, running into him like in the street, like when he was, you know, around town and stuff like that. So just always a very personable individual and somebody that just really to me understood like what his goals were in fighting, like not necessarily making it to the top level, but someone that, again, had a very respectable career fighting, you know, the likes of fighters that he did. And I don't think like enough people probably realize just how he came into this, like at 21, and by 26, he's winning the Ultimate Fighter, like no experience before mm-hmm. that. I mean, that is, and this is someone that had like a lot of options of where he could go in his career and really dedicated himself to fighting in a big way, like training at TriStar with Grants here in Ontario, a lot of gyms. Like he just had a really, he was very much connected to the entire Canadian scene. So there you have that story. Numbers from Friday, SmackDown did a huge number, 2,367,000 viewers. This ended up being the second highest number of the year for SmackDown, behind the June 17th show, which that was 2 days after the first Wall Street Journal story broke and the episode that Vince McMahon appeared on at the beginning. So you throw that one out because of those odd circumstances. The last like normal show you'd have to go back to is all the way in September last year when they were at Madison Square Garden. So a huge viewership. In 18 to 49, they did a 0.57, 744,000 viewers. And that was up 17% from last week. They had a big increase in adults 35 to 49 and finishing first among network programming, second for the night behind the U.S. Open tennis tournament. So it was interesting to see this way, the two comparisons on Friday with this and Rampage, that SmackDown, you would have to look at this as kind of a post-Clash at the Castle bump that SmackDown received. Rampage did not receive that post pay-per-view bump, and maybe some of that was seeing on Dynamite that there was not going to be any follow-up on the controversy coming out of the pay-per-view. But SmackDown, I look at it as, you know, coming off the pay-per-view with Reigns and Drew, maybe Braun Strowman showing up was, you know, something worth on Raw that people were interested in. Ronda Rousey wrestling, I mean, I don't know what you necessarily assign all of this to, but this was in terms of overall viewers, second highest of the year.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I think we can, you know, pretty much safely say that this, whatever momentum they are carrying off of the regime change, has sustained itself. And it's not just that, but I think
this is the first time SmackDown has gotten, you know, like SmackDown has not had the big bump that Raw has, but this would be the first time we've seen like a noticeable increase affecting SmackDown.
Right. Okay. Yeah. But I mean, to me, it just, you know, it is indicative of the continued, a recognition that the product is in a better place right now. Storylines are starting to make a bit more sense. The in-ring product is better. Whereas I, you know, there are a number of things going on with AEW, but I think in particular to Rampage, people still recognizing that, you know, what you're watching on this Friday night at 10 p.m. Eastern isn't necessarily the most relevant product, and that you don't necessarily need it if you need to get your full fix.
Also, it was very close between Dynamite and SmackDown in Canada. SmackDown did just under 135,000 viewers, 66,000 in the demo. And Dynamite last week did 132,000 and 81,000 in the demo. So it was SmackDown just edging out Dynamite in terms of overall viewers, and then Dynamite ahead of them in the key demo here in Canada. So an interesting comparison point there. Rampage in the U.S. on Friday did 429,000 viewers and a 0.14 in the demo. They fell 11.5% in viewership, down 12% in the demo, and ranking 16th for the night among cable originals. And they had a pretty sizable decrease of 21% in men 18 to 49, although women in the demo were up their highest in several weeks. But this was Rampage, their lowest viewership since July 29th, and not getting any kind of post-pay-per-view bump. And that was for a show that, I mean, it did have the tournament match attached to it, and then whatever value you might assign to a ROH title match on the show. It was a show that had two notable matches, but this was just a Rampage that did not have much momentum following everything that happened with AEW last week.
Mm-hmm.
And that was Rampage, the show that we try to figure out every week where this thing is going, and it seems to be just in a certain level.
Yeah, I'm very curious to see like what some of these upcoming Rampage only tapings may look like. You know, in particular the Toronto one that's set to be its own date. Will they, you know, dress that one up a little bit more to fill it with stars that you don't typically see on Rampage?
It's a good point, because like October and November, it's going to have a lot of either live Rampages or, in the case of Toronto, its own taping that you would think like you do have to kind of bulk these shows up, because you're drawing on their own. It's not just being done off the back of Dynamite. And it was certainly interesting, like, not to say it was shocking, like you can see the differences of Dynamite and Rampage watching it, but being in the building last Wednesday, like, you really do see that shift in those 15 minutes from Dynamite ending to Rampage starting, and just sort of the air that's out of the balloon of an audience that finally gets to exhale after 2+ hours of really great wrestling, fast-paced wrestling, and suddenly you take a breather, and then you're trying to get the audience up again. It was a struggle last Wednesday, for sure.
Yeah.
Raw tonight was in Portland, Oregon, at the Moda Center. And it started off with Seth Rollins coming out, and this crowd is just loving this guy. They're chanting his theme, and he talks about karma beating Riddle at the Clash, and he turns down any notion for a rematch as the audience is chanting for it. And this leads to Riddle coming out. He just says, bro, drops the mic and charges at Rollins and chases him into the crowd. Riddle gets knocked into a railing, and then Rollins runs away. And as Riddle is going towards the ramp, the Judgment Day come out, and they try to recruit Riddle. They state that they were all stars on the rise until someone held them back. So they all have something in common, and Priest is bringing up their history together in NXT, and they mention, look how much we've helped Dominic already. And Riddle is giving this some thought, but says that he's focused on Seth, and he declines the offer. And Balor knows that the laws are relaxed here in Portland, so your brain might be cloudy. You can either stand with us or you stand in our way. And with that, Riddle drilled Balor with a knee, sends Priest out to the floor, and we went to a commercial break, and the impromptu match is made between Finn Balor and Matt Riddle.
How much were Riddle and Priest presented on screen together?
I mean, they were there at the same time in NXT.
I mean, I just find it, because like I felt like, you know, that line was more so about like them training together. I forget the name of their wrestling school, but anyway, I like them bring up like sort of these like real life off screen relationships between the characters to kind of deepen their history.
That's a good point. Yeah. He was I was just defaulting to NXT, but you do have that background between them as well. So it's good to
interject. Monster Factory. Thank you, Brian. Yeah, so, you know, this Riddle Rollins feud is continuing, I think, as we expected, coming off of the pay-per-view. And it seems like it's kind of being built in largely the same way, you know? It brawls through the crowd. I mean, it was successful the last time. I get the sense it'll probably be just as successful. This one I give a lot more leeway for, because I think we all know that the end result, which is the match, will be really hot. I'm hoping this time they add a stipulation to it, you know, just to kind of dress it up and make it a little bit different. But yeah, decent little interaction between the two here to set that up.
It should be like you can just do your Extreme Rules match in October. Like you don't need any like creative stipulation beyond that, I think. Mm-hmm. And Riddle can get his revenge or not. We will see. So Finn and Matt Riddle had a match. They went 13 and a half minutes here. Riddle stopped Balor and hit him with a fisherman buster, and then goes to the top. Priest distracts him. Ray then jumps the barricade, attacking Damian Priest, and takes him out through the crowd, leaving Balor by himself. And Riddle hits the bro to sleep, and then a bridging German for a two count. Floating bro lands on Balor's knees, and then it is Balor missing the coup de grace, and Riddle hits the draping DDT, crowd is cheering for Riddle as he signals for the RKO, but Seth returns on the apron and allows Balor to capitalize, hitting 1916 and the coup de grace to pin Matt Riddle in 13 minutes and 36 seconds. So they are continually beating Matt Riddle, that it seems like this has to lead up to him getting some finality in this program, beating Seth Rollins.
I think it must, you know, at this point. It's, again, like, I don't mind him losing here, because I would argue that Balor needs the win, maybe even more than Matt Riddle right now. And they did it in a way that really, you know, was served to heat the feud, putting everything onto Rollins for causing the loss and telling this continued story of Riddle just being really pissed off. So I imagine they'll just set up another beatdown, you know, next week to get Riddle's momentum back up.
Yeah. I do hope that from this, we just see Riddle or Rollins like really win this feud, in that one of them moves on to something bigger, rather than, okay, this guy wins this month, the other guy wins that. We're right back to this 50-50 stuff. And I just want to see someone elevate themselves. And they're kind of talking about that with Rollins, like they were indicating him going for the championship after, although, you know, he's still here with Riddle. And then after, Rollins comes back and he hits Riddle with the stomp and tells Riddle that it's over between them. Move on, bitch.
Yeah.
Several bitches getting uttered here on the show. Sarah Schreiber catches up with Damage Control, and Bayley brings up the only reason that they did not win the tag titles is because Aaliyah pinned the wrong person. But tonight they are in control, and when she is asked about Belair, Bayley ends the interview.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now they're making a big deal out of the illegal tag thing.
It's like someone informed them last week. You realize the wrong person was pinned? You're kidding me.
Yeah.
Like, it was just like nothing for the whole week. And then it was on Raw last week. All of a sudden, it's this outrage that has led to all of this. But then we go to a special pre-taped feature on Dominic Mysterio, who has inherited the dark room design.
You're renting it from Miro.
Yes. We got Dominic here to take over. I've only ever been known as the son of the legendary Rey Mysterio. But all that changed at Clash, because for the first time in my life, I felt alive. I became my own person. I was done taking the disrespect and just bottling it up inside. Ed, you got exactly what you deserved. Tonight, I'm going to finish what I started. Jefe, Dad, I know you're disappointed, but that's too bad, because this is my life, not yours. Instead of being upset with me, you should look in the mirror and ask why. Why you never bothered to just get to know me. You think you know me? Instead of teaching, just ask me what I wanted for my career. But for a tiny, tiny man, I died at this line, calling your father a tiny, tiny man. You cast a large shadow, and I'm done living under it. And then Rhea comes in, whispers in his ear, and he says, I'm not your baby boy anymore. I'm a man. And this, I'm only hoping, is because they were hitting it so hard, I hope it's his new tagline. I'm a man.
I like it. I'm a man.
A real man's man. Dominic Mysterio.
This is the most we've gotten out of the heel Dominic character speaking wise, and I enjoyed the delivery. It is a little different from his old voice, you know. Yes, he still sounds very much like a 12-year-old, but now he's a 12-year-old trying to sound like a 13-year-old, and I think he can't help but sound this way. But I also feel like they're embracing that aspect of the performance. A line like I'm a man. I mean, it sounds like he's basically saying, I'm not a baby. I'm a big boy. You know, it's that same type of like energy. And I love it. I love it. I think the role for Rhea playing sort of like the corrupter.
I think Rhea is awesome in this whole thing. Like, she to me has emerged as like the leader of the group. Like, she feels like the one pulling all the strings.
At least with this project, you know, with the Dominic project. Yeah. I mean, we've taken Rhea out of the women's division for now, but this is a great way to, I would argue, like, increase her star power even more so than, you know, just having her in the mix of another challenger for Bianca Belair, for instance. That will come. But for now, I think this is a great role for her. I don't know. Do you get the sense they're insinuating anything more going on between like Rhea or Dominic, or is this strictly just like, you know, somebody like
I don't think they're really hinting in that direction. I think it's more just a control that Rhea has over Dominic. Like mm-hmm. they certainly are not indicating like going that direction.
But I find it very interesting, and I look forward to hearing you recap more and more of these.
Well, I've got to say, for this is a personal thing. His pacing is very good, like in terms of just transcribing. He delivers at a very solid pace, like mm-hmm. one of the best, to be honest.
Oh, lovely.
So if he's going to give me these speeches every week, I'm ready. They aired a video for Johnny Gargano featuring highlights of his NXT run and building up for his return tonight in the ring. Theory reacts to this and reveals that the opponent will be Chad Gable, a close friend of his, who walks in and says instead of Johnny Wrestling, he will be Johnny Shush after tonight. And Gargano just ran in livid. He was so upset. How dare you call me Johnny Shush? That's so disrespectful. Can you imagine being called this? Johnny Shush?
It's almost as bad as being called Shorty G.
Well, we had our tag title match. Raquel Rodriguez and Aaliyah against Dakota Kai and Io Sky. Raquel is dominating from the beginning. The story here is like Raquel carries this team. That's pretty much.
Is it the story? Because like I don't hear the commentators really play that up. You know, it is obvious when you're watching the action. Yes, like she's the dominant one, sure. But like, yeah, maybe they don't have to. Maybe it doesn't have to be stated so overtly. You know, like Raquel can still complain later.
Well, anyway, Aaliyah comes in. She damage control gets the advantage on her. Kai hits a face wash and they just cut the ring off, preventing her from getting to Raquel. Finally, Aaliyah counters a double suplex and hits neck breakers to both, makes the tag, and in comes Raquel. Sky tries for a Hurricane Rana that Raquel blocks and they end up crashing to the floor, and Aaliyah has tagged herself back in, so she is the legal woman here. Hits a face buster on Kai, and Bailey puts the foot on the bottom rope to break up the cover. Raquel goes after Bailey, and then Io Sky comes off the top with a moonsault to the floor, and I thought Raquel was just destroyed on the floor. This just looked brutal. And she's done, and that leads to Dakota Kai hitting the chiropractor onto Aaliyah and pins her in 12 and a half minutes. New tag team champions, and they get the full pyro celebration as they hold the belts. And then there's a shot of Raquel, who is consoling Aaliyah. So they were not teasing Raquel being upset at any of this. My question would be, did we have to go this extra route to get to our new tag team champions?
That's what I was kind of wondering, you know, after seeing the result, even after seeing like the match announcement being made for this, did they simply want to delay the damage control win for after the trios match at the pay-per-view for some reason? I mean, they won the match, so what was the, and they like, weren't
why
even involved.
Why beat them at that time? Like their first loss should be something of substance, right? It's like instead we beat them and now they've got a loss and now yeah. we have just for tag titles that already need some rehabilitation. It's like, here's a totally forgettable title run, a 2-week title run that we do to kick things off of this quote unquote new era.
I mean, the other explanation is that they wanted to, you know, give a bit of substance to Raquel and Aaliyah, either to promote them as a legitimate tag team or to, you know, further this singles rivalry that the two might have. Of two former champions, you know, going to war with each other.
I would say the opposite. They feel like less of a legitimate tag team, just losing this quickly. And you could have done this story based off of this loss 2 weeks ago.
I don't disagree whatsoever. Yeah, it's one of the, I think, rare, like, you know, questionable moves we've seen from this latest regime.
It almost just felt like this was one where everyone assumed Kai and Sky were winning, so we'll go a different route and we'll just get back on track in 2 weeks. But I just don't want to see these belts like just bounce around all over the place, and we will see what the follow-up here. I also don't feel like Raquel and Aaliyah as a tag team is a great use of Raquel either. Like, it just feels like something very short-term.
Even as a feud, I don't think it's great.
No, like, you know? It's like, yeah, I don't know what these 2 weeks really accomplished for anyone. Ray confronts Dominic in the back. He had no idea all that was going through him and holding it inside. He admits it's his fault and he apologizes. You don't have to face Edge. give us a chance to be a family once again. Dominic won't even turn around and look at his tiny, tiny father. He says, Edge is like a brother to me and an uncle to you. And when Edge is backed into a corner, he won't hold back. And if you face Edge tonight, we can never go back to where we were before. And then Ripley says, comes in and says that they too are dangerous. And Dominic, he's a man now.
Yeah, he's not a little boy. Yeah, I mean, they're giving this program a lot of airtime, and I think it's deserved. It's by far
the top
the most
story on Raw. This is like the number one program on Raw now.
Totally, absolutely.
Chad Gable and Johnny Gargano. This was Gargano's first match since War Games last December, and they mentioned that this is the building where TakeOver Portland took place in February of 2020, where Gargano lost to Finn Balor in this arena. So there is a if you want to just go back and look at that card, it is quite a remarkable card to look at 2.5 years ago of what consisted of a major NXT card.
Okay.
But it starts off with a grappling sequence between the two, and the announcers are stating, like Graves is stating, you know, Gargano has to prove he isn't a big fish in the small pond of NXT. So that is it, the small pond of NXT. Smith says that we know Gargano isn't getting any sleep now because he's got a baby. No sleep. No sleep when you have a baby, way. Gable drills him with a right hand to take over, multiple standing switches, and then lands with a spin kick, and Gargano hits a cannonball off the apron. Gable takes over again with a dragon screw out of the corner. We see a slingshot spear by Gargano, and then Gable places him on the shoulders and rotates him into a DDT, misses with the moonsault, and then a wheelbarrow into this beautiful bridging German by Gable for a two count. He goes back to the ankle lock. There's a counter to the American automatic, and then Gargano is limping from the ankle lock, bounces off the rope into a discus lariat. Both men are down. Crowd is into this. Otis catches Gable, and there's a tope suicida from Gargano to both of them. Super kicks Otis, and then hits one final beat to pin Gable in 13 minutes and 51 seconds. I thought this was great. Very strong.
An excellent match. You know, a bit of a standing ovation for these two afterwards. It was, I mean, speaking of TakeOver, I thought this was absolutely like a TakeOver worthy, you know, pay-per-view caliber match. And I think it immediately showcased the reason why Johnny Gargano is so special. You know, I'm just trying to imagine like the typical Raw viewer who never really saw much of him in NXT wondering, well, what's so special about this guy? Why is this guy getting all this coverage? This immediately showed you he's an outstanding in-ring performer. I think Gable was a very great choice for debut opponent for Gargano. He does not overshadow Gargano in size. So you had, you know, a pretty fair looking matchup. In ring, it was a hot match for the hardcores, which this product, you know, on the main roster, it seems like it's increasingly starting to re-cater to. And I thought it was also, for the newcomers, a good match to showcase all that Gargano had to offer. So it was a really good debut. And I wonder if they'll like pivot to an Otis match next to show what he could be like against somebody bigger.
Is there anyone who has had a greater just resurgence? Reversal of fortune than Johnny Gargano? Like there is no, like,
I thought you were going to talk about Gable. Actually,
Gable has been greatly helped by all of this. But when you look at Gargano and what he was leaving and the idea that, okay, in 9 months, you're going to be on Raw in a push role as Johnny Wrestling, and you're going to be just sent out to have great wrestling matches, and you're going to be one of the top baby faces on the Raw brand. Like, how? Yeah. How in God's name is that possibly going to happen when I'm watching a man bark like a dog on one show?
Unfathomable, honestly, a year ago. Like, this end of year is going to be something, like, very special. But you know what, John? The year is not over yet, so who knows, like, in 6 months' time, what stories or what, I don't know, how what maybe we'll see something. Maybe Vince will return.
An outcome for this guy that, like, he could have signed elsewhere just to be, yep, you know, just for the security of it all. Mm-hmm. Like, he really took a gamble not signing anywhere. I'm going to wait. And without any possible inkling of what would be in store for him. And this is the position he now finds himself in. I mean, it's just unfathomable when you think about, like, the odds of, like, something so like a generational shift in philosophy in this company occurring that so greatly benefits you when there was probably a very easy option for you to just go to AEW. And instead it's like he just stayed at home and he didn't sign anywhere for 9 months. I don't know how many guys would take that amount of time. And it just worked out so in your favor at the end.
Mm-hmm. And he got
and probably got a great deal coming back here too.
And he got to spend time with his baby.
So he is definitely on him and Nate Diaz, not doing too bad when it comes to, their luck turning out for the better. Mm-hmm. So Otis he attacks Gargano after, and Gargano like fights him off, super kick, and does a crotch chop before rolling out, and he's going up the ramp and gets nailed by Austin Theory, who attacks Gargano, takes a selfie, and then Theory goes and shows it off to American Alpha. So we've got Gargano and Theory that appear to be in multiple programs.
Yeah, I would say they're probably at like a pay-per-view post that we're kind of looking towards, whereas, Otis is probably more like next week on Raw.
After the commercial, Austin Theory is in the ring and he says that Gargano is overrated and a bottom feeder at the bottom of the food chain. And he gets on the fans for chanting, "What? Say what again?" And he's just trying to encourage it at this point. Once again, Kevin Owens interrupts him and he says that Theory is stating that he's tired of these interruptions. He's going to take over this industry. And Owens makes fun of his promo last week and brings up the jaw injury that appears to be all fixed now. And brings up the line that he used last week about, him being he's no longer the hand-picked future, because that's not how it works anymore. And he says, guys like me and Gargano, we don't look like you. And Theory says, nobody looks like me, including the fans. But Theory says he's done more in 5 months than Owens and Gargano have done in 5 years combined. Which, I mean, this guy did kind of headline WrestleMania this year, did he not?
Okay. But, fine, sure.
A bit of an accomplishment, I would say. Owens says that Theory was gifted the U.S. title and then won Money in the Bank in a match he was never even in. But Owens also brings up the fact that, yes, I was handed the Universal title, but that's the only thing you and I have in common, and I'm proud of being different from you. I actually like the fact that he brought up like the easy counter argument that someone would just have in response. He called out the one contradiction to then explain it away, and it just made for a more sincere promo that he's bringing up the obvious counter argument. And then he just gets into this fiery promo, which I would love to know what the breakdown is every week that he gets. It's like 10 minutes. Kevin Owens talks, leads to fighting at the end. And you fill in the 10 minutes because he just comes out and he asks, how many guys have come around here that are young and chiseled that ended up going nowhere? There would be hundreds. And Theory, you're a dime a dozen. Guys like me and Gargano are one in a million. We are the heart and soul of this business. You are the appendix, completely disposable. And he hopes it's not true about Theory and that you are the future. But I see how you carry yourself. I don't think you have what it takes to be the future. So prove me wrong. Stop thinking of the moments being handed to you and create some. Check your ego at the door. Let your passion drive you to become better and leave everything you have in this ring every single time you're in it. And Theory just stands there. This is an incredible delivery by Kevin Owens. And Theory just flexes his muscle and says, you'll never be like me, Kevin. So Owens slaps him. They get into a fight. The referees separate them. And Owens continues on the floor, ducks a briefcase shot, and Theory avoids the stunner. And in all of this, Theory gets his nose busted. And Owens just yells, a broken nose is just the beginning, bitch.
The close-up of like Theory on the ramp with that broken nose looking very unselfie worthy, but like just so mean and violent was, I think, a wonderful, piece of TV. I obviously, what you were describing earlier, John, about what it might look like on that rundown and how loose it probably is, I wouldn't be surprised if it was too far from the truth, because it seems like this has been what Kevin Owens' role on the show has been lately. it's been to go out there, fill about, 5 to 10 minutes of TV time just talking. And every time it's been great. And that to me, it's become an attraction on Raw just to kind of see Kevin Owens exercise one of the things as a professional wrestler that I don't know if he's been able to, fully do so much. And that's cut what feels to me like a very loosely scripted, if not maybe even largely improvised type of promo.
And it's probably grounded in like a lot of reality, trying to get the best out of this guy.
Well, I would say that it certainly feels that way because I don't exactly know how much cohesion there is between this week and last. I feel like this week almost felt like the first interaction that these two should have had. Versus like last week where they kind of did like a similar song and dance and even had a match where Owens won.
It was the blow off. They did 17 minutes last week and they are going back to it next week. Like it almost felt like you're supposed to forget last week. And this was, as you said, the first interaction instead of a follow up when we saw the match last week that ended without any controversy.
Right. Yeah. So I absolutely love this segment. I just question why you did it last week if you're going to do it again this week and to build up to another one. I hope the answer is just not simply 50-50 booking because that would be very disappointing.
Yeah, and I hope too it's not just the crutch of you really want wins and losses to mean something. So what did beating Theory mean last week and why should I care about next week for him to do it all over again?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you could see him cheating to win next time. Theory seems to be the one poised for an actual program with Gargano, so maybe you can argue he's more important. But then, why have Owens beat him last week?
Maybe this leads to Owens getting the briefcase. Maybe they feel that's a way better option, or get it on to someone else other than Theory.
It's very possible. Under a new regime, I think you would have reason to believe that they might actually take the briefcase off of Theory. But I think they will have enough confidence that Theory can carry this through, or at least I don't think they're giving up on him.
Think it's giving up on him. I think it's taking away something that could be a negative for him to just do a failed cash in because a successful cash in.
Who's to say it'll be failed?
I would say it would be a big mistake for him to cash in now and put the title on this guy. I think that would be
doesn't have to be now.
Well, it's
but I know what you mean. The gulf between what a Roman Reigns standard is set versus where Austin Theory is right now, it seems so far. In the past, give Miz, a week long title reign. Who cares?
Yeah,
but now it feels like it's a different level of.
It's the major reason I don't want to see these belts necessarily broken up again. Is getting back to that it's just it's your turn to have the title. Instead of who is the top star that should have this title, that it's going to really mean something because they have to be of a certain level to hold this thing. Because 2 years ago, Theory can win the title because anyone could. And it was a title that was not all that valuable to. And now it does feel a lot more prestigious in terms of how it's been handled.
Can you see Owens, though, even as that guy to, take over for a Roman or possibly who else is sort of in line right now
of the available candidates? And they've got some decent options now of Cody, Rollins, who I think
Lashley, by come WrestleMania, he'll be up there.
Owens, I would certainly put up there. In terms of your guys that your promo guys, this guy might be right at the top in this company at the moment. I think he's going to be a very, very strong heel or baby face for this company.
I think they've done a tremendous job with him over the past month and a half. I still feel though he has a ways to go to completely kind of shed that mid-card stench, I would say, that he's had for the better part of 2-3 years, it feels. But they're on a great track right now.
If they got to a point with, and I know certainly the location helped, but in 4 weeks where you got Drew McIntyre up to a level, if you had a sustained build of a month of Kevin Owens cutting promos and at this level, I think come that pay-per-view, I think he would feel like a very worthy candidate at least a challenger that people can suspend disbelief that this guy can talk his way into a really compelling main event program.
Yeah.
They plugged the NXT anniversary with the voting taking place and noting that Pretty Deadly will defend the tag titles against the Creeds in a steel cage match, and that is going to kick off the show Tuesday at 8 Eastern. Bianca Belair comes out, and she is issuing an open challenge, and it is answered by Sonya Deville, who couldn't get a crack at the SmackDown title on Friday, so now she's going for the Raw title. And Belair says that... Deville who had said that she cost her position here on Raw and made a fool out of her. So Belair cuts her off saying, this is an open challenge, not an open mic. And that leads to our match for the Women's Championship. Belair hits a moonsault off the apron to the floor, lands on her feet, and is hit with a clothesline. They go through the break. Belair is sent into the post and then comes back with a fallaway slam. Handspring moonsault misses, and Deville hits a knee off the second turnbuckle. And it's Belair who holds on. She's in position for an inverted DDT, but drills Deville with her knees, kicks off the turnbuckle, and is able to elevate her for the KOD and pins her. This one went 12 minutes and 3 seconds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Honestly, not much to say about this one other than just, you know, it looked like they needed a bit of a showcase for Belair, and they ran out of people on the roster, on the Raw roster at least. So Deville, I think, seems to be as good of a choice as any. Like, she's a reliable mid-range heel, strong personality, strong promo, decent in ring. And that seems to kind of be her spot on the card right now. You know, the occasional little kind of scuffle with Adam Pearce in the back and then coming out and losing to a champion, for instance. So... I'd be lying if I said I didn't think like Deville's ceiling was higher, you know, upon return, especially like at the end, towards the end of that Mandy Rose feud, where I really feel like she like leveled up in a big way, at least on the microphone. Maybe in ring, you know, there's still a bit of a divide between like a top level person and where she's at right now. But I hope there's more for her than just, you know, jobbing to the champion on either brand.
There was a great, back and forth in this where Corey Graves is going off stating that perhaps Bianca Belair, she's scared of Bayley, and Byron cuts him off and he's not going to hear any of this. He's like, what are you talking about? How about last week when Bianca Belair challenged Bayley and Bayley didn't accept? How about that, Corey? And it just goes silent. It's just quiet. Graves has nothing. And then like 2 minutes later, he picks it up and he gave some argument about, like, I feel like he had just been completely, like, checkmated in the commentary. So he comes back and is like, well, Bianca's hoping that somebody else steps up and therefore takes Bayley's role or something like that. Like, he was trying very hard here, but it was not the best explanation of this.
It's always more fun, I think, you know, trying to be the troll and playing, like, you know, using heel logic to defend, obviously, illogical actions by the heel.
How about when she challenged Bayley last week and Bayley turned it down?
It's this Graves like Saxon dynamic that I think they really like. Personally speaking, I could do without it oftentimes. Like there is, you know, they do stumble upon like I think good moments, but I also feel like Saxon I think needs to work on like being able to come across even more like combative, or at least more dominant up to Corey's level, because Corey is the type that is just like so loud, you know, he'll just like, he's almost a bit overbearing. But yeah. they're an interesting good pair.
I would mind having 1 week where we hear Saxton just playing off of your play-by-play guy and not having Corey there, if there would be any noticeable difference with him. If you would see more, because a lot of times it's those are my takeaways of Byron, is like just the arguments, which kind of just wear thin after a long time. But we'll see with this, with the loss of Pat McAfee, who knows, maybe they'll be saying, hey, Pat, what if you just load up like Zoom and you could do commentary? Just we'll send you like, you could do it over ISDN or something.
Do you like Graves more like on SmackDown without Saxton or on Raw with him?
I find... It's not a strong negative. It's also not a strong positive, I would say. I'm not a big fan of like the bickering with Corey and Byron, but I'm sort of just used to it. I found it to be a lot more grating when it was Corey and Renee, where it just found like that was like it dominated the commentary during that whole era, that it became a real distraction. Whereas I wouldn't say the commentary is a distraction with them.
Mm-hmm.
Bayley comes out after the match and asks if Belair was inspired by Dakota and Io's win earlier. They're going to take control of the whole division, and Belair has a big fat ego and says that Belair will get her match when the time is right. Whenever the challenger grants the champion her match, that's when it's going to happen. So then Io and Dakota surround the ring, and they go after Bianca, prompting Asuka and Alexa Bliss to run down and clear the ring.
It's a very unique way of building to a title match, with the challenger being in absolutely no hurry to capture the belt.
It makes no sense.
I think it only makes sense because, you know, we had Bayley pin Bianca, and Bianca, more so than wanting to, you know, defend the championship, wants to get that win back. It bothers her, and that's what Bayley is holding above her. But you're right, it doesn't make sense that, you know, any competitor in the WWE wouldn't want the championship immediately. Like, what's to stop Bianca from saying, okay, you don't get it then. You're never going to get it.
Yeah. Well, let's look at our historical win-loss record. I can rest on that one loss. It's okay. I'll be fine. Yeah. So then Omos was going to take on two enhancement talents. And we come back from break, and we've got the technical difficulties sign. And this appeared on the USA Network, and then Sportsnet had its own technical difficulties screen. So we can hear the audio fine. We just can't see the picture. It just says technical difficulties, which I'm sure if we were getting the video with Omos, we would be seeing technical difficulties. So as advertised. And then it just comes back as he's got these two guys stacked on top of each other. And that was that. So
did you get the names of the jobbers?
No, I didn't. One of them, I don't have them. No.
I feel like I heard one of the announcers mention Akash Marazi,
which I'm sure is a playoff of the Arash Markazi.
There has to be. Yeah. So I didn't catch the other one, unfortunately. I'll say, like, so this, obviously, like, people in the U.S. didn't have this issue, but, like, for Canadians?
No, people in the U.S. did.
Oh, they did. So they couldn't see this either?
There were some that did, yeah.
Oh, interesting.
I definitely saw screenshots of, like, USA had having the screen for the technical difficulties.
Interesting. Okay. I feel like it was actually more effective in pushing Braun Strowman in this jobber, like, or sorry, Omos in this jobber match situation. It's kind of like those old cartoons where, like, you know, two characters get into a fight and then it's just a big cloud of smoke. And then the smoke settles and all you see are bodies laid out. This match came back right with the after the pinfall with the two bodies laid on top of each other. It was almost kind of perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost
and
like
you also don't need to see the match from Omos. So I mean, wins all around.
This is theater of the mind. If someone was like, man, if only people didn't have to watch Omos wrestle, he'd be such a great monster.
I think they should intentionally do this next week, and the announcer should go crazy. Like, oh my God, Omos is hitting a shooting star press. He's taking 100 guys at once. I can't believe this. Well, like, they should just call it like it's the craziest match you've seen.
Well, maybe they've stumbled onto something here. Edge meets with Rey, and Rey is pleading from one father to another, and he asks for one more chance. Edge says, you heard him, Ray. He said it himself. He's a man now, so he needs to pay. And maybe it's better that I knock some sense into him rather than you. And he apologizes in advance for going out to massacre Ray's son. I've got to say, I'm sure these two are really tight, but Edge is a bit of a dick here in this whole thing.
Why?
If ever it's like sometimes you've just got to listen, Ray, I was wronged in this. Dom has this coming, but you know what? Because he's your son, I got to give him a pass here in this whole thing. But no, this guy's dead set on not just like he wants to really harm this man.
I mean, kicked him in the balls. You know, if someday my son grows up and kicks you in the balls, I will probably try to stop you from wanting to have a match with my son.
Exactly. But and I would be the bad guy if I said, you know what, Wei? Oscar's a man now, okay? So it's better that that I knock some sense into him rather than you.
But if you
and he towers over you and calls you a tiny, tiny, tiny father. Tiny man.
Yeah. But if you guys were both professional wrestlers and this happened to be your industry and this just happens to be how we settle our differences, I mean, I wouldn't blame you for wanting to have a main event with him.
I'm just saying, like, for these two that have been friends for 20 years, you would think that Ray has built up enough of a friendship that it's like, okay, I'm cashing in a favor here, Edge. I feel that after 20 years, you should honor it. And Edge is like, nah, I'm good. Kevin Patrick catches up with Seth Rollins. He says how Riddle misses every time he has a shot at him. And he is the face of Monday Night Raw. And that leads to Bobby Lashley coming up and stating that you don't have the gold, and therefore you are not the face of Raw.
This wasn't any Bobby Lashley.
Okay. I knew you would observe.
Portland hipster Bobby Lashley appearing on screen for the very first time here. I mean, looking very sharp, looking very cool.
He was wearing his Bobby Glassleys.
Yeah. Glassleys. That's excellent.
So Rollins,
this is my face of Monday Night Raw.
Rollins is like, you MMA guys, you've got no brain cells left. And he even made a joke about the octagon, which is just funny because he never fought in an octagon. But says, this is not the title I was referring to, but I will gladly take it off of you next week. And they set up a match for San Jose next week, which is a city that Bobby Lashley has fought in San Jose. So there you have it. So next week, hipster versus Rollins.
Yeah, I don't exactly know how you would describe Rollins, you know. Maybe he's more like 80s, sort of like, I don't know, New Romantic or something. I don't know. But they've done a great job, I think, with the U.S. title, to the point where somebody on the level of a Seth Rollins challenging for the championship does not feel like a step down. It actually makes sense why one of your top stars on the show wants the challenge for this championship against who at this point, Bobby Lashley feels like he's one of the top stars of the brand for sure. It doesn't feel like holding the belt would be beneath anybody right now. And beyond that, they set this up really nicely in, you know, suggesting that this isn't just a battle for a championship, but a battle to become the face of the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like further, like to me, elevating like what this title means for Raw. Okay, so he hasn't fought in San Jose, but he has fought in Mulvane, Kansas, Catoosa, Oklahoma, Fort Riley, Kansas, India, in New Delhi, and Enoch, Alberta.
Interesting. Okay. Thank you for the fact check. I mean, I wouldn't think anybody would have ever corrected you on that. But
wait, are you out of your mind? Are you out of your mind? There would be a target on me tomorrow.
Actually, John.
Yes. I know guaranteed of one person that would absolutely correct me. So from there, we go to The Miz. Earlier in the day, you've been on many shoots in your life. I think if you had been sent all the way out to LA, okay, to go do this interview, and this was like, they didn't even get a question. They got like one question in on him, and then they leave. They just get up and leave. This seemed like a very what was the purpose of this interview?
I mean, I would hope that they were shooting other things for, I don't know, if a network special, maybe like an E documentary, and that this just happened to be the tail end of it. All that setup, all that lighting just for this, I'd be pissed off. See yourself out of the house? Like, I mean,
who would leave this crew in your house? There's so many questions I have about this. So The Miz is interviewed. His kids show up. They go over to play the piano. And then Maryse is there, and they're off to some premiere, which I'm wondering what the premiere is. Like, their season just ended.
I mean, it could be a movie premiere. They are in L.A., aren't they?
Okay.
Man, these kids, I'm always amazed at like child performances and their ability to feel so natural. So like, I'm assuming nobody instructed these kids. Okay, what are their names?
I don't know the kids' names.
Mary Lou or something.
Mary Lou Mazan.
I don't fucking know. Okay, I forget the kids' names anyway. I'm assuming they like it's like one of those double names, like one of those like hyphenated double names. Can you look this up?
I have no idea what their kids' names are, but now I really want to find them because
Ms. Children. I'm just doing this because I don't want people. Madison, Jade, and Monroe Sky. Okay, there you go.
Okay, there you have it. I just found close. Wikipedia. Children, two.
So I'm assuming nobody's instructing, hey, Madison, Jade, and Monroe Sky, go over, say hi to Dad, and then go play on the piano. They just naturally do it. And when kids naturally do things like that, it just makes it feel so much more real and so organic. And it was lovely seeing the children make their Raw debut, or at least
I could argue that for the purpose of this segment, I don't know if attaching them to children in the home was the best idea here.
I think that was exactly the point. The idea that Dexter Lumis is in there with kids.
Exactly. Well,
who are they intending on
the villain, though, is the Miz here. I am not at all villainizing the Miz. I want this intruder out of the house where these children are.
But what were they like? Were they just leaving the kids at home? Like, I mean, they must have a housekeeper.
They left the crew to watch them.
Okay. So that's the reason why the crew was there to get this interview and also to babysit. Okay.
Miz is refusing to answer any questions about Dexter Lumis. And then we can see Dexter in the window outside peering in as Miz is explaining that, Maurice comes in. She thinks this Dexter Lumis thing is completely preposterous. He'll never come to our home. This is like the worst horror movie. It's like, you know, just calling out, he'll never come for us.
He said they have a security system. They have dogs. You know, this is actually like, there's like an episode of Total Divas, I remember, where they exactly went through this, you know, like some sort of home and not a home invasion, but like somebody like at their door while Miz was like on the road. So, kind of basing it on a bit of reality here.
And he will not talk about what happened with Lumis. So he cuts the interview and leaves with Maurice and says the guards will let you out. And then we pan over and there's Dexter Lumis inside the house that contains his children. And he shows off a drawing of their family. Mm. Is this guy is...
He's the baby face.
He's the baby face in this home intruder. What did Miz do? What did Miz do that was so awful? This guy was wrestling a match, and Dexter Lumis showed up to choke him.
Yeah, we don't exactly know the reason. No, we don't. I think we're supposed to home invasion is cool if it's being done to somebody you don't like. That is the lesson I think wrestling teaches us. You know, horrible acts, horrible
crimes. Not when there's little kids. I think little kids, you default. This is a criminal.
Well. It's actually being played for laughs, this whole story, you know? Like, I think that it exists sort of in an era of, like, this is the cartoon aspect of the show. No pun intended with the guy who draws cartoons. But, you know, this is, like, the non-believable, you're not supposed to take it so seriously part of the show as the announcer's kind of, like, you know, reactions to it would entail.
All right. I'm just trying to follow along here of what I am supposed to be taking from these segments, because I am rooting for the Miz to have this man incarcerated for life.
Well, what exactly is the follow-up going to be? I know like next week we're going to see the Miz and he's not going to want to talk about it again, but are they going to address the children? What exactly happened between Lumis and the children?
How would he not go back and realize that? And watch this. Is he going to just be, because sometimes, were we not supposed to see, was this one of those segments where Dexter Lumis is invisible? We didn't see him? He wasn't there?
No, we saw it because the announcer saw it.
Okay, the announcers confirmed that they saw it as well.
Yeah.
Okay, because there are some times when we're not supposed to see him, even though fans in the arena.
That was a one-week power he had.
Oh, okay.
You know, it was a temporary power he had.
Okay, so he's fully fleshed out now.
We can all see him. Agreed, yeah. So the announcers come back from this and Graves is hysterical. He's like, why aren't the cops being sent?
The voice of reason.
And then Jimmy Smith, coming from his MMA days to calling home invasions and pivoting from that to wrestling match, I think he is the most fun person to watch. You know, just he's like, well.
We got a show in San Jose next week, and here's the lineup.
Yeah.
Bobby Lashley and Seth Rollins and Kevin Owens against Austin Theory. They replayed like the whole segment almost with Owens and Theory.
I'm assuming this was like some sort of time fill, because like I don't think this was significant of a segment enough.
They ran like pretty much the whole pull apart, and are they just replaying this whole thing? It was very long.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they're at heading towards the main event. We were short on this much time. We thought the home invasion would take longer, and it didn't. So here's the whole segment.
Well, we had to get our time in for Dominic Mysterio's main event against Edge with Rhea Ripley in the corner. Dom is out to new music, and if you watch his mannerisms as he gets onto the turnbuckle and is slapping the, like, he's just doing Eddie. Like, that's the template. And if anyone calls him out on it, it's like, it's, I guess it makes sense. He's just copying Eddie. It's like, just do Eddie when you're out there as best as you can.
You learn from the best, of course. And I think he would have reason to, being the illegitimate child of the man.
Edge just destroys this man at the beginning. You wanted this, Dom. And Rhea's reminding Dominic that Ray cared more about Edge than you. So go kick his ass. It was not working. Edge is just destroying him, throws him into steps. Finally, it's Rhea that gets the offense in on Edge by chop blocking his bad injured knee from last week. And Dom rams it into the steps. We come back. Dom is in control here. And then Rhea holds onto Dom's ankle, preventing a superplex. And Dom hits a frog splash for a two count. And Edge hits the impaler DDT. Crowd gets to their feet as he signals for the spear. And as he goes for it, Dominic counters by rolling into the single leg crab. Something that I'm sure was taught to him by one Lance Evers.
He's a former Storm Wrestling Academy student there.
This was a cool spot to
nice little reference.
Yes.
Yeah, you thought Eddie was the only person. Okay, he's mimicking. Listen, yes. Okay. There are two charisma gods in our industry. One is Eddie Guerrero. The other is Lance Storm. Well, honestly speaking, two great teachers he would have had.
As the saying goes, success has many fathers.
Yes.
Edge powers out of the single leg crab into a cradle, then ties Dominic into the ropes. He's delivering strikes, and he goes to spear him when Ray, just like Dexter Loomis's his way in here, just poof, out of like thin air he appears, and he gets in the way. Edge pushes Ray off, and they start arguing when Damian Priest appears, yanking out Ray and tossing him onto the desk. Finn runs in, attacking Edge for the DQ at 15:10, and Rhea hits Edge with a chair shot to the bad knee, hands it to Dominic, and Dominic repeatedly hits the knee with the chair. And they elevate the leg of Edge onto the chair for Finn to deliver the ultimate coup de grace onto this leg as God. Judgment Day is booed. And Jimmy Smith says, a disgusting family photo as they boo, and says, looks like Dominic has a new family now.
Yeah, that is right. You know, I have no doubt that coup de grace was perfectly safe, but God, it looked devastating. You know, like, we usually see guys, like, you know, do the pilmanizing thing, like doing using the chair, but like when the knee is elevated and you just see a guy's like jump with his feet onto the knee, like it just felt so much more devastating. I thought overall, like, the storytelling was really successful in this match. I thought the crowd engagement was really strong because the build-up to it has been really strong. Edge I found awesome in this role, just as like this towering monster. Like, he size wise he's so much bigger than Dominic, and he had a reason to play, you know, the monster in this match. He completely golfing, like, he's a Hall of Famer versus his friend's son, who's like tiny, still a bit of a rookie, and so he completely dominated.
Which is a really tough dynamic to get across when you've got like that. Like, in this one, you're right, like, It works for like this story of like Edge and so. I would say like with Dominic, like, this match to me was very much it was laid out the way it should have been. Like, I think Dominic going 15 minutes that's a really tough ask of him at this point.
It's Rhea is the difference maker. You know, Rhea is as a bigger part of the act as Dominic himself is, and she was the competent one, really kind of serving up the advantage for him to continue onwards. But I think Dom did a decent job wrestling a more heelish style. There's still, I think, a lot to be desired for him to like feel like a fully fleshed out person. But like right now, it's like, I don't think he's supposed to feel like a fully fleshed heel. He's supposed to be, again, a 12-year-old trying to look like he's 13.
And they were smart in the sense that, like, you did have this knee injury, but it, like, this match, like, having Edge sell for most of this match, I think it would have been really tough to watch for
without Rhea.
Without Rhea, but also, like, a lot of this, like, Edge took, like, the whole first half of this match and then a lot of the last half of it. Like, it was just, like, Rhea, like, got the heat temporarily and Dominic worked over the knee. And I think it was just enough until they kind of shifted the focus back onto Edge. Because it's a tough visual watching Dominic kind of handle this man who just is, like, one is just like towers over the sky. It's like, mm-hmm. to me, it's a tough visual.
It is. Yeah. Which is, I guess, which is why they're so reliant on having the extra people around to really help Dominic get up there. I like the fact that like they left a lot of the physical attacks for Dominic a bit more like, they didn't really do it as much last week as they did this week, because it made this week feel like that much more impactful. This week felt like he fully turned to the dark side. And I continue to really enjoy like Rey Mysterio's role in this, like being sort of stressed father torn between the best friend and the son. He, I think, continues to do a very good job.
Yeah, and you have kind of Edge and Rey getting like at odds as well at the end of this. I like the... like the drama that they are creating here. It's like, I can see mm-hmm. people really getting into this story. It's like your week to week soap opera. It's not just we'll figure out what we're doing next week and we're just going to do this endless cycle of rematches between all of them. Like, it seems like there is a progression to this story. Each week, Dominic has now fallen. Like, he is now locked in with the Judgment Day. And I think it's good to have this kind of week to week kind of episodic story that they have going on.
I would argue like every wrestling feud should feel like this, you know, like an actual, like believable character motivations for every single participant involved. Rather than just, I think, I don't know, a series of like, I beat you.
The New Day and Viking Raiders.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah. This is like, it has been good so far. I'm not saying this match was excellent. I don't even think like match quality wise, it was that special, other than just the idea to see like Dominic perform as a heel for the first time, Edge in a very dominant role. But I think the storytelling is what stands out to me the most, and I think it's strong.
Yeah, I like this episode of Raw. There was some very good wrestling on the show. I think when you have Balor and Riddle was very good. Gable and Johnny Gargano was very good. Yeah. Those two really stood out to me as the big high points of the show, along with Kevin Owens' promo.
Agreed. And I think the main event too, you know, for the storytelling. So there continues to be enough good stuff on these editions of Raw to make 3 hours still. I mean, it still feels like 3 hours, but it's at least a 3 hours with something that you're leaving with, rather than 3 hours with no redeeming value whatsoever.
Best Omos match I've ever heard.
That's right. Again, I think they're stumbling onto something, you know. It should just be like, he should only have lights out matches where nobody can see anything.
I like the direction that the tag titles are on the team that is viewed as the serious team that we're pushing. So
the women's tag titles.
Getting the titles onto Kai and Sky. I think that's the right move. I really did not like this 2 week detour that they went through. And
be different if we have, like, we might still get follow up with Raquel and Aaliyah that might justify that 2 week run. I just don't really know.
What would justify this 2 week run? Like, if they have
what everybody suggested, right? In that, I don't know, it's either Aaliyah turning on Raquel or Raquel turning, maybe Raquel turning on Aaliyah might be more significant, you know, having her go heel. But Aaliyah is not at all a babyface that I feel like the audience will feel that much sympathy for.
I think that would have to be a really short Raquel just destroys Aaliyah and then she's moving on to whatever is next.
Yeah, yeah.
So there you have it, Raw from Portland, Oregon. So next week they are in San Jose, where the face of Raw is at stake.
The face of Raw, yeah.
In this Will it have glasses or not? That would be the question.
I hope he gives this look. It's a great look. All right, let's go to some let's go first of all to a super chat here from Jamie Coe, who sends $6 Canadian just to say, I'm here for one thing.
Just one?
And I have no idea what that one thing is, because that's all he wrote here. So I hope you got your one thing, Jamie, whatever it was.
Dominic.
Maybe. Thank you for the support. Let's go to some feedback from forum.postwrestling.com. This is available to all of our postwrestlingcafe.com patrons. Would you like to start, John?
Okay, Saeed from Vancouver. Kevin Owens just keeps getting better and better on the mic. He seems to be the Moxley of the WWE right now in that regard. They give Dakota and Sky the tag titles, only to go back to being up against Bliss and Asuka. Hopefully they can give us a better feud this time. That is one thing, like coming out of this this tag tournament, it is not like we have created all these like different teams and a division, for lack of a better term. Like, it is really just the champions and then whoever the challengers of the week are, which are what you know, you had this tag title program for 2 weeks, but coming out of this, you really don't have any deeply set up teams to go to.
Right. Agreed. You know, it still very much feels like a division that's in need of rehabbing. At least we have teams to speak of, but you know, I think match quality still leaves a little bit to be desired. And even just like story of like, how many defenses can there possibly be before they run out?
A 17 minute match that ends in a DQ. Why are we surprised? Some things will never change in WWE. Just give Dominic a distracted win. I didn't even care so much about the DQ. I mean, you got the angle at the end that I thought the coup de grace spot looked really cool, just in terms of like an actual like injury angle that they've done with Edge. And do you think that Rollins and Lashley ends with a clean winner next week?
Yeah, I'm guessing no. I'm guessing no for that one. And that is to Saeed's point, you know, if they continue. Yeah, like it's one thing if like, you know, a DQ finish leads to further story, but at some point your audience is going to catch on to the fact that these main events aren't going to have finishes. And next week, I can't see either person really take – well, you know what? I could see Riddle costing Rollins the match just to return the favor for the week.
I would like to see them further establish like these matches when you build up to them, that they do have your like a clean winner. Like but that's going to take a long time, I think, to get people into that mindset that odds are you're going to get a clean winner. Like you do most weeks on like a Dynamite main event.
Mm-hmm. They should have a clean winner next week. Like again, Rollins can take these losses, especially at the hands of like, you know, Riddle costing him. And I don't think he loses anything.
All right.
Let's go to Muggin, who says a solid episode that had Judgment Day look strong and to a lesser extent, Dominic Mysterio. The jury's still out on his long-term potential as a heel, but writing off Edge is a good start. Yeah. Do you think Edge, like how long do you think Edge has gone from this injury?
Well, I thought originally like last time that they attacked the knee, but then they quickly set up the match with Dominic. This one seemed like a more significant one that he should be out for some time. And if that's the case, like I would think he's someone that is going to be on that list for Saudi Arabia. So maybe he's gone for, I mean, that's almost 2 months away. But at the same time, I think this story kind of loses something with Edge being off at this time. So maybe you still have a presence with him on television, even if it's not wrestling. He's just done like quite a slew of matches when you put in like the Damian Priest one, the match at Clash, then this one with Dominic. Like he's wrestling like semi-regularly over this past month.
Yeah, and who can they introduce to this story to, I guess, you know, play the other person? If it's not going to be Edge with Ray.
Ray has another son.
Who?
I don't know. You got to find the son then. You need to add people. Maybe Aaliyah. If Aaliyah comes back, that'll be a real test of this regime. Will they have someone with the same name on the same
show? I think
you
should just use the Aaliyah that they have
as Ray's daughter.
Repurpose her recast her as Ray's daughter. Okay. Damage Control got the tag titles. Johnny Gargano looked like he hadn't missed a day. He and Chad Gable rocked it. Kevin Owens says the battery is back in this new regime. His fiery promo on Austin Theory was tremendous.
Hernice from New York City. How are we supposed to take Aaliyah seriously? I just realized that she doesn't have her own theme or music. Now that all right with the world title and the right ladies have the titles. When is Sasha and Naomi coming back? Even though he didn't use much offense, I was hoping Dominic came out with new offense outside of the Boston Crab. Well, yes. I mean, you certainly have the titles on the two that would very much make it an easy return program for Sasha and Naomi if that's the direction you go.
I feel like they could hold off Sasha and Naomi and Naomi's return for like even a Survivor Series at this point, don't you think?
And where's Survivor Series?
Boston.
Perfect.
Oh, okay. I just guessed. Yeah, totally. Absolutely. It just feels like it would be a bigger deal for that. I think Damage Control have to kind of establish like a reign right now. Like they have to appear more dominant than they've been thus far, losing in the finals. And then make it so unbearable that you really have audience clamoring for Sasha and Naomi to, you know, take the titles off of them. So probably that would probably be a great bet, John. My turn?
Yes.
We got Alex from Portland who attended live. Alex says, I get why you would want Dominic and Edge to end in a DQ, but I'm bummed the lengthy main event ended that way. Rhea seems much harder with this Dominic perverting character than she was in her earlier Raw singles run. I feel keeping her separated from the women's division has helped her stand out. Gargano's debut was fun, but the highlight of the night was Kevin Owens. Theory is good, but he feels very much in the wrong place right now, while Owens knocks it out of the park whenever he gets the chance. If Roman is holding the title for longer, having a babyface be Money in the Bank holder sounds more intriguing. Owens would be great, but Gargano-Reigns would be an utterly fantastic match. First of all, let's talk about that. Yeah, you were suggesting that, John. You know, could these series of matches between Owens and Theory be leading to like a briefcase challenge? It could.
Like next week, I don't see Theory beating Kevin Owens. At least I really hope that he doesn't, because it kind of just trivializes. Like, I like the idea of like building up a guy, putting some wins behind him and really getting Owens going. And it would make sense that, you know, you get a briefcase program out of this. But at the same time, I don't see this as they're just forgetting about Theory. Like, I do believe they see a lot in Theory, but I think this could actually be a positive for him of getting that briefcase off. And that gives him kind of the ammunition to make some adjustments and have this, you know, thing that is taken away from him, that he ends up coming out of this as sort of a longer term project, but is not sort of thrown into that mix immediately.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually quite like the idea now that the more I think about it, especially because, you know, you have Owens as a baby face and Roman Reigns as a dominant heel champion. So, it's a case where like a babyface with the Money in the Bank stalking the champion kind of makes sense. His question is, where do you see Omos going next? Him squashing jobbers is getting old, but I can't see any good candidate for him to feud with.
I can't say that there's a whole lot.
And who comes out of that one? You know, like
Braun to me is now like he's back to being like the new shiny toy, and he's a lot more versatile of a performer than Omos. Mm-hmm. So, But they're also on. I mean, it doesn't mean a whole lot of them being on separate shows. But
are they though? Like Braun is on both shows thus far. We don't know which. Everybody's on both shows. So yeah, I do feel like Omos is kind of in that, you know, under the new regime, sort of in that lost position. Same with like Aver Mahan. When's the last time you saw him?
Yeah, I mean, there's I think only going to be so many of those roles that we see. Like maybe Veer gets a whole makeover.
Another one? He's a baseball player this time.
Okay, yeah, okay. Yeah. And then the promos start running now, and then he'll debut the night after WrestleMania.
Maybe, yeah.
Last one. We have Garrett here from The Mook. Was at Raw tonight. Good show, hot crowd, completely full, but the top level was shut off. He said the biggest reactions were for Edge, the Kevin Owens promo, Seth Rollins' introduction, and Balor's pot reference. Most heat was Judgment Day at the end. Gable made some good jokes about Portland during the commercial break. First Raw here since around 2018. Portland has always been a hot crowd. Lashley beat Damian Priest with a spear in the dark main event. Well, thank you very much for the live report, Garrett.
Is the pot reference like, honestly, that special these days? Like, isn't it legal in most places now?
If it got this reaction, then it got the desired outcome. If it was
I think him saying that in Toronto, yeah, it would get a reaction. But I also feel like it would be like, we have a pot store on we have multiple pot stores. We have more pot stores than Tim Hortons, honestly, like in Toronto now.
Yeah.
And it just like it doesn't feel like that big of a deal anymore. But I don't know, maybe in certain parts of the world it still does. Okay, we go to Kate up next, who says it feels like WWE is still working its way through what things it wants to change and what it wants to keep. And sometimes that can make things worse, like combining a 15-minute plus Dominic Mysterio match with a DQ finish. I'm all in favor of more wrestling on my wrestling shows, but longer matches should be reserved for people who can carry them. And WWE has long since burned the screwy finish bridge. Clearly a lot of people upset about this.
It's a larger issue that Kate brings up, because as we brought up, like for Lashley and Rollins next week, your reaction is, well, Riddle probably costs them that. Is mm-hmm. that enticing you to tune in to this and watch it when you believe there's a good chance I'm not getting a clean finish. Like, that kind of defeats the purpose of being able to promote a match a week in advance when it's, oh, this is a pretty big match. I'm sure we're going to get a DQ finish out of it. Like, it kind of hurts you when that's what your audience's immediate assumption is.
I suppose, like, when I watch wrestling, I don't necessarily get as upset about, like, finishes like that, as long as there is, like, story material coming out of it that is relevant. I feel like we got that today with, you know, Dominic taking sort of like a more, like an even deeper heelish turn, Edge, like getting like an injury that'll mm-hmm. probably have him out for several months. And also, I think deepening like whatever Rey Mysterio's kind of character motivation is now, not being on best terms with Edge. Yeah. Like, as long as I think you have some result coming out of it that is significant, that makes me watching this worthwhile, I'm not as upset when we don't get, you know, a 1-2-3 clean finish.
I was the same tonight. I didn't have a big issue with the DQ. Like, the story was bigger there. Like, you got something coming out of it. And I'm the first one to complain when they do these long matches. To me, it's like when you're doing it and it's just, it's the only out we have to a match. It's just, we're not giving you anything. It's just, hey, we don't want to do a winner or a loser here. At least in this one, like, you got like a follow up at the end. You got storyline advancement with it. That the DQ was a way to get there, but the DQ was not the last step. And you're just going off with a sour taste in your mouth because you didn't get a finish.
I imagine that, like, there's also probably thinking in trying to, like, separate what you get on TV versus what you get on these premium live events. You know, it's different from AEW's philosophy, where I think, like, they're want is to, like, promote big matches, give you, like, actual results. But then I personally feel sometimes you get to a pay-per-view where the pay-per-views don't feel all that different from a Dynamite. Is that justification for this type of booking? Maybe not. I'm not sure, but I'm sure it's at least their justification. Okay, Kate goes on. Rey Mysterio appears to have been taking promo lessons from his son because this was 80s after school special level cringe. I'd like to see them wrap up this portion of the JD story arc quickly and put the spotlight on Rhea where it belongs. But Dominic seems to be the project right now.
Yeah, do it for us.
Kate's not a fan.
Give us a chance.
Like, I guess I'm so used to, like, professional wrestling, like, level acting that I didn't mind it so much, but I see your point, Kate. Kevin Owens just continues to reach new heights, and I sincerely wish they'd let him be the one to take Roman's title. His unpolished, rough-edged persona is the opposite of Roman and the opposite of Cody, for that matter, and I think they could craft a great story where he finally gets the big win. Sadly, I'm pretty sure I'm out of luck with this one. I still love seeing him on my TV every week. Yeah, there's a potential, you know, great feud between Cody and Kevin Owens. Yeah, promo wise, that'd be great. Last thing here is a super chat from Slim Sieber, who sends $5. Thank you for the support, Slim Sieber. He says, with unified tag and world championships, do you think we get away from the brand versus brand format for Survivor Series?
Yeah, so I mean, I guess like they're still kind of the promotion for it. Sure, seems like they're still leaning towards that. I would really hope that is that would be a format I would love to see just thrown out the window. Personally,
talk about like non finishes. You know, like that's like at best you get a champion beating another champion, but not taking their belt, which I think, you know, defeats the purpose of a champion versus champion match. So at the very least, I like they could still do brand versus brand matches. I just don't want to see the champion versus champion matches.
I just think like the brand split to me, it's never felt weaker. It's never felt less distinguished of who is on what show and what they're possibly fighting for. I really hope Survivor Series is sort of built around something a lot more captivating than Raw versus SmackDown. That to me is, and that's a show. Let's remember, like, it sold out right away. So that's one show where this has totally benefited from this optimism in the product and
the name brand, maybe, you know.
To a degree, like I don't think Raw versus SmackDown is the reason people are buying that, but there also might be some that they do get a kick out of people in t-shirts wrestling each other.
At best, like maybe like you do a 5-on-5 Survivor Series style match with something at stake, and I don't know what that something could be, like that. I don't know.
We go through this every year.
Yeah.
About adding some kind of stakes to it. Someone gets something out of it. Like, everything's on the table. You can do something that's a reason to have, like, you shoot some kind of angle that leads to one match and the winners all gain something, whether it's positioning in the Royal Rumble, you're something. I think like it's something that I think you have an audience that they will get into if you give them a reason, but it's mm-hmm. been years of, I would say like the 1 year over the last few that they got interested in was when you injected NXT that 1 year.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, you know, like who was involved in that? I mean, it was Hunter and his brand. So I look forward to seeing like Hunter's take on, I think what everybody recognizes is a bit of a stale format of Survivor Series.
And there's also that quick turnaround because they've got the Saudi Arabia show, I think is November 5th. And then Survivor Series is, I think it's 3 weeks after that. Like it's a very quick turnaround from one to the other. All right. Thank you to everybody for your super chats, all of your feedback, including the live reports we got.
A lot of feedback for Raw these days, you know? So, I mean, clearly more interest in the product, even on our audience.
Yeah. So Raw is picking up steam. We are going to be back on Wednesday with Rewind to Dynamite. We will be live minutes after Dynamite concludes. I will guarantee that driving to the location of Dynamite and sitting in those seats and taking notes, far more relaxing than what I feel I will go through on Wednesday in the comfort of my own home, taking notes and then going live 5 minutes after. I said to Wei as we were sitting in the seats, this is the most relaxing Dynamite I've ever watched.
It does move really the pacing feels a lot better for some reason, like when you're watching live.
Well, I'm not doing like five different things. I'm just sitting there and I am taking notes, but nonetheless, yeah. it was quite a difference for me that we'll be back to normal on Wednesday. So we will be live then Tuesday night up next as well. Talk Volume 6 dropping for all members at postwrestlingcafe.com. And then on Wednesday, the NXT 2.0 roundtable show with Braden, Davey, Denise Salcedo, and Jason Solomon. So look out for all of that. Postwrestling.com is your home. And that is going to conclude Rewind to Raw.